It's about half past the hour, and this is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, your host, and I'm really glad you've joined us. If you live here in Michigan, it sometimes may be difficult to realize just how much might be changing. Some of it literally changing under our feet. It's not just the policies that are passing the state legislature. Through ballot initiatives and other measures, the state has been working to strengthen its small d democracy. And also, with a windfall of new federal dollars, some people believe Michigan's economy could significantly improve in the near future, not to mention the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure that could change around us. Both of these things have been written about recently in separate reports by the Center for American Progress, a national progressive think tank. The first report is about how Michigan, quote, became a blueprint for strengthening democracy. The latter is about how Michigan is on the precipice of being transformed because of this new windfall of federal investment. How much of this is really not just true, but substantively important? How much will this change the way we live here in Michigan? And I think this is on everybody's mind. Specifically, how might Michigan's economy change for the better in the next 10 years? That's where we continue the conversation here on Detroit Today. And to talk about how Michigan might gain a lot of jobs soon and what the state needs to do to build its middle class, we've got Emily G here. She is the Senior Vice President of Inclusive Growth at the Center for American Progress. Emily, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you. Good morning, Stephen.
Yeah. So the Inflation Reduction Act, the Infrastructure Law, and the CHIPS and Science Act, these were all very big deals in Washington, and there are things that we've talked about before here on the show. But I want to start with you talking about why they will have such a big impact here in our state, in Michigan.
Yes, so as you mentioned, there were three big pieces of economic legislation enacted by Congress and signed by President Biden. And our report talks about what these will mean for communities on a local level. And we've decided to focus on Michigan because it's a state where, you know, that has historically been the heart of American industry, specifically the auto industry. And all the changes that unfolded from that, the development of the interstate highway system. And we think that this new economic transformation underpinned by this industrial policy in these three pieces of legislation will really be transformative, but also will revitalize, again, American industry and also think about how we go about building infrastructure in this country.
Let's talk specifically about each of these. The Inflation Reduction Act. What is it about that we here in Michigan should be cheering?
So the Inflation Reduction Act is, frankly, the biggest investment the U.S. has ever made in addressing climate change. It will help us accelerate the transition to clean energy, including through tax credits for households to invest in things like cleaner appliances. And, you know, together with the other bills, we'll accelerate the overall industry level and household level transition to clean energy, including investments in solar and wind and electric vehicles. And for the state of Michigan, that means that it's spurring investments in electric vehicle manufacturing, including batteries. So one project that we looked at in our report was Ford's $3.5 billion investment in the Blue Oval Battery Park out in Marshall, which will be the first lithium iron phosphate plant for EVs, EV batteries. And it's, you know, it's one of many that's happening in the U.S., but we think it is, you know, it is emblematic of this transition that's happening to move us away from, you know, burning carbon toward clean energy in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. What about the infrastructure law? That I know that's a subject that we talk about a lot here on the show, especially in Southeast Michigan, where we have really aging infrastructure that we have underinvested in for such a long time that the tab for fixing it and updating it is really staggering. I mean, it's billions of dollars. How does this new federal law help us out?
So the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act provides money for localities and states to upgrade infrastructure. Some of these are things that might be highly visible, like highways, I-375 coming down in Detroit being replaced with more pedestrian and commerce-friendly infrastructure is one example. It will also support better water systems, both for runoff and also for drinking water, to make sure that all Americans have access to safe drinking water. And it will also support, again, with other pieces of this economic legislation and industrial strategy, a transition to clean energy by supporting clean power generation, upgrades for the grid, and these pieces all work together to make America more competitive, but also improve our quality of life.
Yeah. And the Chips and Science Act, which is also something we've talked about, our elected representatives here from Michigan in Washington have really been focused on this. It ties not only into the developments that we see in the auto industry and the need for stronger tech, but of course this idea that we need to own more of it here in America and maybe in Michigan.
Yeah, so the Chips and Science Act, as the name suggests, is aimed at revamping the semiconductor industry. But I think it's not just about, you know, the semiconductors that we're producing, it's also about how we do it. And so there are incentives in that bill to make sure that people can get, you know, have good jobs, that they're paid fair wages, that they have, you know, crucial supports like childcare on site when they're making plants to manufacture chips. It's really an investment in American manufacturing and sort of reshoring advanced manufacturing to make America more competitive, make sure that we have good paying jobs here at home. And it's also investment in skills for workers that they can carry out throughout their lives and be on a trajectory of being able to build, you know, build a stronger career, build wealth, and also to grow the middle class.
Yeah. We're talking with Emily G. She's Senior Vice President of Inclusive Growth at the Center for American Progress, a progressive think tank. That think tank recently produced two reports on how Michigan has strengthened its democracy and the ways new federal investment may transform our state. We'd love to hear from you during the conversation as well. Call and let us know how you feel about the changes that we've made to voting and democratic participation here in Michigan. And do you think these strengthen our democracy in our state? Also, give us a sense of what you make of the opportunity from all the federal money that is coming into Michigan right now. How should we be using that? How should we be trying to grow the Michigan economy? Should we be focusing on things like manufacturing, which have carried us for decades and decades? Or should we be switching to more of a knowledge-based economy? What kind of things would you like to see us investing in? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Emily, I want to talk about the focus in the report about Michigan and this federal money on I-375, which is a little spur in downtown Detroit that wiped out an African-American business district and neighborhood many decades ago. We've now agreed to restore that part of the city, at least get rid of the freeway there and give the opportunity to create a new neighborhood. We talk about this on the show quite a bit. It's an exciting project. It's something that is an opportunity for us as a community. Why do you think it's such a big deal? And how can its removal particularly spur our economy?
So in the short run, I think the effects that you know, people in Detroit will be seeing is that there will be construction work to, literally take down this highway, which was for decades the shortest interstate in the United States at less than a mile long. And it's also a chance to, very visibly try to start righting a wrong, which is that when the highway was built back in the late 50s, early 60s, 130 million people, black people, were displaced out of Paradise Valley and Black Bottom, which had been a thriving neighborhood with residents and commerce. And so the hope is that by revitalizing cities and thoroughfares like this, we can build an environment that's better for residents, it's better for businesses, and that's better for the environment too, frankly. I think, you know, and over the longer term too, the hope is that we're, you know, again, we're spurring economic growth and we're creating communities that are better and safer to live in, that are friendlier for people stopping through to shop or dine or go to work. And this is not, you know, Detroit is one example, but it's certainly not the only place where we are rethinking, you know, as a country about what our infrastructure looks like in order to reconnect communities. Another example that we highlighted in our report is in Kalamazoo, where the Department of Transportation has given about $12.5 million for Kalamazoo to change its traffic flow downtown to hopefully lead to a more vibrant environment down there.
And that's about changing the zoning code and transportation network. But let's talk about how much cities should be thinking about removing highways and connecting neighborhoods. As you point out, I-375 is just one example of pretty poor urban planning, you know, even beyond the horrible effects this had for our African-American community here in the city. It's just a nonsensical way to organize cities. There are lots of places, not just in Michigan, but all over the country, where we have the opportunity to rethink that. How serious should we be about that?
So this is one of the largest investments we've made, you know, across these three pieces of legislation since the interstate highway system was built in the mid-20th century. And so this is a huge investment to think about, you know, not just roads, but also, you know, as you are thinking about redesigning neighborhoods, whether it's big cities or small towns, also making sure that we have, you know, water infrastructure and we have power grid infrastructure to support growth and support a better quality of life. So, you know, it's a chance for mayors and governors and other local leaders to think about how to improve their communities. And it's also creating a lot of, you know, good construction jobs that will be, you know, will be, or, you know, for which prevailing wage needs to be paid. And hopefully, you know, a lot of it is also going to be union labor. And we know that union membership has a key role in helping people achieve a better quality of life and higher wages.
Yeah. Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Emily G. of the Center for American Progress. We're going to talk a little about their look at our changes to our democracy here in Michigan and how we have strengthened the opportunities for democratic participation. Also going to add another voice to the conversation, but want to get going with your voices, the listeners on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. As I said, you can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and you can be part of the program that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET brings you news about your neighborhood.
WDET plays music from the Motor City.
WDET amplifies the voices in our community.
WDET is your public radio station.
Listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm always glad that you have decided to join us. We're talking right now with Emily G., who is a Senior Vice President of Inclusive Growth at the Center for American Progress, a progressive think tank. They have two new reports out about Michigan. One takes a look at all the things that we've done to shore up democratic participation in our state. Lots of ballot initiatives and other kinds of things that we've changed to make sure that more people can vote and vote easily in our state. They also have taken a look at all of the federal money that's coming to Michigan and what effect it might have on our lives. We want to hear from you during the conversation as well. 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. I also want to add another voice to the conversation as well. Ashley Masiolek is a research associate in the Structural Reform and Governance Department at the Center for American Progress. Ashley, welcome to Detroit Today as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So I want to talk quickly before we get to listeners about this idea of Michigan as a beacon of democracy. I love that idea. I think there are a lot of people who are looking at us right now nationwide. Sometimes inside the state, we don't know as much about that. We're busy fighting over it, and we don't realize that we've kind of stepped out to the fore. Emily, I'll give you the first crack at talking to us about how this all looks to you, and then we'll go to Ashley to talk about it as well.
So I think what we see in this new industrial strategy is that it is a historically huge investment to improve advanced manufacturing here in the U.S., to transition us to clean energy and to job training. But it's also a chance for people to see that government can work and that government can unleash the potential of the private sector. And we also see throughout the country that when, you know, sort of small democratic processes work, whether it's voting to unionize as workers at a, you know, Blue Bird electric bus plant did a few weeks ago, or the Ultium Cells plant in Lordstown, Ohio, or providing public input to, like, as people did in the Kalamazoo project that we talked about earlier. All those types of processes can make public investment work better by gathering public input and allowing people to be part of the process and also making sure that jobs are good jobs.
Yeah. Ashley, we have been on this journey for several years now in Michigan, and we've made some really big changes. I still feel like we haven't seen all the effects of it. Some of the things we're starting to realize some benefit from. But talk about, again, from your perspective, what makes us a leader in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right to say that you won't see all the changes immediately. It will take time. But one thing that makes Michigan a beacon of democracy change is how quickly some of these changes were implemented. So voters were able to pass a few proposals in 2018 and 2022 that really increased voter registration options, voting options, and it made the ballot more accessible, and people's voices were heard through that. And so it will take time, but some of these changes are really already measurable. So, for example, Black voter registration rates are now on par with white voter registration rates. The redistricting process in Michigan has improved drastically. So it means that the state legislature is now more representative of the people's voices. So these really immediate changes are measurable now, but the long-lasting effects of them will be seen for a few years. And yes, Michigan is a prime example of this. These quick changes haven't happened in other states, not in recent years. So it's really looking to them as an example to how to strengthen democracy, especially in a time when these issues are becoming more partisan and more divisive. But they're really not. They're what the voters want and what the people support.
One of the things that you guys have looked at is how the state has been able to close some racial gaps in voter participation. Mm-hmm. Something else that I think we don't always take note of as people who live here and are in the middle of all of it. Ashley, talk just a little about what those numbers look like and why they have been shifting.
Yeah, absolutely. Between 2018 and 2022, Black Michiganders, their voter registration rate and voter turnout rate increased drastically, both by about 17%. That change is not true of white Michiganders, and it's not true of Black voters across the United States as a whole. So Michigan is a unique example here. And by increasing voter registration options and voting options like early voting, mail-in ballots, those were able to capture Black Michiganders in a way that they weren't captured before. And that really is a sign of a healthy democracy. So it means that both Black and white voters in the state are able to vote and register to vote at the same rates, which is great. Mm-hmm. And it's not true, just to say it again, not true across the country as a whole.
Yeah, I want to take a couple calls here and have our guests respond to these listeners. Linda in Highland Park, what's on your mind?
Hi, Stephen.
Hey.
I just wanted to comment that I think the comment that deconstructing the 375 is repairing a wrong that was done to residents is really, really disingenuous. I grew up in that area. My parents grew up in that area. I went to school in that area. I'm 75. Mm-hmm. So I remember what the neighborhood was and what it became. The people that were removed from there are no longer there. And if the government truly wanted to right a wrong, they would do the repairs out in the neighborhoods where those people are now living. Also, I don't think that the city of Detroit got the fact that we don't have any African-American representatives in Congress, the redistricting mm-hmm. that the state did means the city of Detroit residents lost their voice. It has not improved.
Linda.
And that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, no, Linda, I really appreciate your call. I want to go back to your first point, which I think is really interesting. And I just want to make sure I have what you're saying right, that rather than trying to repair the neighborhood that was destroyed, and sending, you know, which sent African Americans in particular away from a place that was their home, you're saying let's find those folks now and invest in the place that they are as a way of repairing what the damage that was done. Is that right, Linda?
Well, that's not repairing the damage that was done. In order to repair the damage, you would have to improve the conditions where those people are now
right.
living.
Go find them and invest there.
Has been repaired.
Yeah.
The communities around Detroit where residents are that are in extreme disrepair with many abandoned buildings that is owned by Wayne County and the city. Those are the areas I think that could do best with funding at this time,
yeah.
improving the lifestyles of the people yeah. that have been constantly put in peril.
Yeah, Linda, because,
and not that I don't think that 375 could not improve, but yeah. if we are repairing people and the people that were done damage to, repair needs to be done.
We need to find them and repair their communities. Linda, I think that's a really interesting and important point. I want to get our guests to respond. Emily G, what do you say to that?
Linda, thanks for the comment. I agree. I don't mean to suggest that, you know, that this one highway project can get anywhere near, undoing the damage that was done. And I think that's, you know, the harm to that community is not something that we can reverse. But what I do hope is that as these infrastructure projects are implemented, whether it's I-375 or other things around, that we don't make some of those similar mistakes that we did in the past, that undervalue communities that are existing or that displace people or cut communities in half. And so I think this is a chance to rethink how we go about infrastructure and where we invest. In fact, there is a principle in the Biden administration's climate investments called, initiative called Justice 40. And so they have been very intentional about making sure that at least 40% of benefits for federal investments flow to communities that have been disadvantaged historically or underserved or are overburdened by pollution. And so as we think about, not just infrastructure, but also things like investing in cleaner water infrastructure and, the tax credits that go for clean energy are sort of higher and incentivized to go into lower income neighborhoods. I hope that we will be able to make sure that these investments flow down to the communities that need them most.
Yeah. Linda, I really do appreciate the call and the really thoughtful ideas and comments there. Let's go back to the phones and go to Jack in Lincoln Park. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Uh-huh. I'd like to say I agree with Linda, but let's take it a little bit further. In terms of 375, 375 is a vital artery between the east and the west, and it is in the downtown area. If anything, it should be strengthened, maybe widened, because of the traffic that will go from east to west gets bottlenecked there, and that slows down the flow of traffic for everybody going east to west. And instead of using the money to tear down 375, the Q line, which only goes to the new center area, would probably be beneficial if it were to go all the way to something like 8 miles.
Yeah, of course.
They could put a parking ride.
So, Jack, I don't want to cut you off, but we're going to run out of time. I think these are interesting ideas. I've got to say up front, I don't agree with widening the highway and doubling down on the mistake that I think we made from a planning perspective. But I do want to get our guest to respond. Ashley Masiolik, I'll give you a chance to talk about what Jack's saying here.
Sure. I actually might point it back to Emily, who focused more on the infrastructure, although I'm very happy to talk about democracy reform.
Yeah. Emily, go ahead. Talk about what Jack's saying. Should we double down on I-375?
So, I think this is a chance for us to rethink what we, what we value in infrastructure and the trade-offs that we have to make. And, some of these have no perfect solution, but the replacement will be a six-lane boulevard. And one of the benefits is that there's new land available for development, as well as new two-way local roads that help connect the traffic flowing through there to local businesses in the area and local homes in the area instead of being a straight shot through.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's no question that we need to do a lot more thinking about what should come after I-375 than we have so far. A six-lane road is not rebuilding a community, it's rebuilding a road. Emily G. and Ashley Masiolik, it was great to have both of you here from the Center for American Progress. Thanks for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you.
That's going to do it for us. Come back tomorrow when we'll have more great programming for you here on Detroit Today. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.